Hi, welcome to Gridiron Gurus. I'm Travis Lazarczyk, alongside Drew Bonifant from the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. It's week eight of the high school football season, the final week of the season. Rivalry games all over the state. We've got coaches from one of the biggest rivalries in the state right here, from Coney B.L. Lippert, from Gardner Joe White. Guys, thanks for being here. Let's try to turn this into like a wrestling smack talk kind of event here. You guys both played in this game as well. What are some of your thoughts about this rivalry that goes back over a century?
It's a great rivalry. You know, we talked about it last year. We have memories as players, as coaches, and growing up just around it. And, you know, every year adds to that. And actually, you know, like, I think I remember more from my coaching days and my playing days that were for a little further removed now. But it's just fun, you know, and you can just feel it, you know, at practice all week. And you get text messages throughout the week from, you know, former teammates, former players that maybe played for my dad, saying, hey, you know, if you're going to win one, win this one. Sure. So we've won some other ones, by the way. They don't really care.
Right. Yeah,
this is the one they care about. So it's pretty fun.
Yeah, definitely. You start to hear from people you haven't heard from in a year, and they text you, or some will show up to practice and, you know, just hang out and watch, and there's definitely a vibe that's different about this week.
Hey, you hear some stories about things that used to happen with bonfires and rallies and everything like that, but it still seems like there's still a good sense in the community for when this game comes about. I remember seeing signs driving through Gardner, beat Coney, and, you know, all the way around when you were going through Augusta. So, I mean, is it still... It's still something that commands the attention of the community as far as you guys are able to tell?
Yeah, I don't think it's like it was when I was a kid. And maybe it's just being young. It feels like the rivalry was bigger in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, I'm not sure. But I think, you know, I think schools now, like we have a rally on Friday, but it's like an all-sports rally. It's for, you know, the field hockey team who's in the playoff game and cross-country as a states or something this weekend. So it used to be maybe more focused on Coney Guard. It was all about football. That's all, you know.
Right.
And I think schools are more, you know, cognizant of, you know, the whole student body, and whether that's good, bad, or indifferent is up to everyone to decide. But, yeah, I think our teams certainly are aware of it in individual, you know, pockets in the community. But I'm not sure we see quite as many signs, quite as much, you know, hoopla. But I don't think that impacts the players or coaches in any. And it might be different in Gardner, but it's not quite what it was, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it is a little bit different, you know, as far as what the town looks like week leading up. And I've mentioned before doing parades and things like that and rallies in the gym. And it's become a little more of a spirit week that's all inclusive to other sports. And that's great. There is just a lot going on. Last night, for example, there's a soccer game on the Hope Field and a field hockey playoff game and a volleyball game in the gym, and there's just really a lot going on every day. And, you know, I mean, 20, 25 years ago, there may not have been as much, you know. And so, yeah, the focus is on everyone, and the rallies are all inclusive. But I don't think it takes away from, you know, too much, because the kids are focused and ready to play. So
I feel like it's kind of an interesting notion to this rivalry in terms of how it's shaken out, in terms of when you look at other rivalries either throughout the region, throughout the country. A lot of them are, that might be one-sided. You know, you'll see like one team's winning at a 5-1 rate or something like that, or it might be dead even. No team really establishes dominance over the other one. But this one's interesting in that, you know, there are stretches of Coney dominance, there are stretches of Gardner dominance. You'll have generations of Gardner kids who never lost to Coney, generations of Coney kids who never lost to Gardner. So, I mean, it's been pretty interesting how it's shaken out from that perspective.
Yeah, you know, and we always pay attention to the overall total, you know, because we don't want to be like maybe the head coach for a while. You don't want to be the head coach if they come back and tie it. So we always pay attention to that overall number, and you know, keep track of your wins as a coach, how your wins as a player. I know I was 1-2 as a player. I don't want to highlight that too much.
Did win a game, right?
Yeah. My senior year, thankfully. But Nate Sargent prevented us from winning too many others. So, you know, it's a rivalry. Those numbers matter. But to these kids, you know, they're just looking at playing Friday night. You know, they probably have no idea what and I don't know what the exact total is right this second. I know we're ahead by a little bit, but so for them, you know, I don't think that they care too much about the overall. They just want to play in their, you know, 2 or 3, 4, however many they get to play in Coney Gardner games, and want to win those.
Do your players ask about the history of it at all? I mean, they know you both played in the game, obviously. Do they ever, you know, say, hey, you know, coach, what was the game like when you were playing?
We have to
playing,
tell them sometimes. We remind them.
Right.
A little bit about the glory days. I don't know. I think, you know, I remember being a sophomore and playing in the 100th game, and this is the 140th game, and that's probably, you know, what they'll remember most about it. Right. We've tried in the past to show them some film of, you know, the 1980s teams playing, and they look at
it. And to get the old VCR out to do that.
It's kind of grainy, and they don't really care because they think there's a bunch of old guys out there playing, and where's the spread, you know, shotgun and
all right. that. Yeah.
Both teams in the
tee. It's a little different than when we were growing up. When I was playing, you know, we tried to emulate former players, and we knew, you know, who Jimmy LeClaire was and Chris Whalen and Pete Story and those guys, you know. But I don't know that it's like that necessarily now. But it could be kids that play now will remember Alonzo, Connor, and things like that. So that's always nice.
And last year we had the interesting scenario where both teams were playing for the right to go to the playoffs. I think both teams came in 2-5, correct?
Yes.
Record. And this year, I mean, it looks like both of you guys are going to the playoffs in B and C respectively. So does that take something away to the game? Does it add something to the game just in that, you know, both teams are in the midst of seasons that are going to be post-playoff seasons, so it's not quite a, you know, last hurrah for either one?
I think that adds to it because I think when you know it's your last game as a senior, it's almost like a draining experience. This is my last Monday practice. This is my and so the game becomes like almost like a burden. Like, oh, it's my last. And so now you know your career is going to move ahead. You got at least one more week to play. So I think in some ways it doesn't diminish the game. It actually adds to it because you're going to be playing with a, you know, positive outlook. You're not going to be at halftime thinking, oh, this is the last time I'm ever going to do this. And so I played in situations where I knew it was my last game.
Yeah.
Coach in situations where, you know, the season's about to be over. Maybe you're ready for it to be over. But, you know, thankfully both teams this year going to the playoffs. And so, you know, it's a week that's unto itself. You kind of separate it out, and it's Coney Gardner week. But regardless of the outcome, you know, you got another game or two or more left to play. So I think it actually adds to that more than it might detract. Some people might think it would take away, but I think it actually adds.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, I think we've had conversations with our seniors about, you know, the last of everything, and this is the last time you're going to play this outfit and you know, things like that. But I don't think they get hung up on that too much. I think we've tried to emphasize one game at a time, the next game. And so it happens to be a big one. It's an important one, you know, part of the tradition and the history they're going to be a part of. And so we're fortunate to be able to have a shot to play the following week. So I think that does add some excitement to it.
I always feel like I have to say, looks like you're going to the playoffs, because I never trust myself with the heel play, Matt. I just feel like I'm going to say, well, you guys are going to the playoffs, then you're going to see a bunch of scenarios shake out and a team drops out.
Yeah.
I don't want so much of that. But
BL, you guys are currently in second place in the PTCB.
For the
heel points might have changed in the last 5 minutes since we started the show. What does it look like you guys could end up with a win? I mean, it's a mess. The way I'm looking at it, it looks like the winner of Lawrence Mesolowski might get first.
Yes.
You know, and Skowhegan, were they to win, would drop to second. Is there any way you guys can keep the bye?
I think so. If Meso wins, I think they go to one. And I think, based on my expert analysis from people smarter than me, since we beat Meso and Skowhegan didn't, since we beat Brewer and they didn't play them, that's two, like, bumps for us. I don't know. That's the word I heard. So I don't know. It's conceivable we end up second if, like, all four games they go our way. I think there's more scenarios we end up third. I don't think we can drop to four. But again, I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. So, you know, it's not something we burden our kids with.
You're going to be home. It's just a matter of it's next week or if you get a week off to get a bye.
So I don't know. I tried over the weekend to have some people look at it, but there's just too many scenarios, and I can't figure out, you know, Winslow and the Lawrence thing, because Lawrence, you know, every time Winslow wins, that helps Lawrence.
Yeah.
And so I literally can't figure it out, so I don't even bother.
Yeah. Been a Coach. The heel point thing is confusing as it is. I think I've never even really tried to figure it out, but it's helped us motivate our guys. You know, you're 1-1, 1-2, and you're still in third place. You know, Morse first game was a win for us, and they continue with 6-1. It's keeping us, you know, in the mix. We've played all the top teams. And, you know, when you're 1-5, you start to, you know, the kids start to, you know, think like, oh, man, here we go. We're having difficulty climbing out of this hole. And we come down and say, hey, no, wait, look, you're in fourth place. And, you know, if you win out, you might host a playoff game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, they get jazzed up.
Sending gift baskets down the Kennebec River to the folks in Bath for their continued success, right?
Yep. Yeah,
and they play Leavitt this weekend, too. So if they were to beat Leavitt, that would really help.
That would really shake things up. Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's like you see how the heel points can help and hurt when like, you know, like we're saying with the scenarios with Coney, there's a good chance that you can come away with a better record than Meselonski, having beaten Meselonski and still finish behind Meselonski. Which, what sport does that happen?
Yeah, it doesn't happen a lot. But, you know, they've had two B South crossovers that are like high quality opponents, so you could make the case they had a tougher schedule. Yeah. So,
but they didn't beat any of them either, right, so they didn't get points for it.
Yeah, I don't know, and that's why I can't really keep track of that.
In the old Crabtree system, they'd have been sitting in Fat City just because of playing those
opponent records, right? Exactly. So it's too much for me.
So you could look at that and say like, oh, that's a point. That's a mark against the heel points. But on the other hand, with your team, that you've been playing more competitively than your record has indicated pretty much the whole season, with how you played Cape, how you played Leavitt, how you played York. So in that case, it is good there's a system in there that allows you guys to stay on track for the playoff berth that you're in line for. Otherwise, you'd be looking at a 1-5 record being out and being like, well, we played better than that. We deserve more than this.
Right.
So.
Yeah, right. It's been a challenge. You worry about them. The kids a little bit because they gave their all those first three games. That fourth game against York, probably should have won that game. But they were pretty dejected after that. And it was a penalty that called back a long run on us late in the game with about 6 minutes left that would have sealed it. And, you know, they started to think, oh, geez, what are we going to do, you know, to climb out of this? And, they know that they can play with these teams. You started to see them get a little bit tired, I think, weeks 5 and 6. The gap in scores, you know, was much more significant than weeks 3 and 4 prior. We started to get thumped a little bit. And so we licked the wounds and we're ready to go play Coney and make a playoff appearance.
I saw you guys against Winslow, and I think I even said to you after the game for a while, it didn't feel like it was a game, you know, the final score was 41-7, but it never felt like that until maybe the last 6 minutes of the game.
Right, and we responded to, they had pretty good field position to start, opened up their drive with a score, and we responded with one.
Right.
7-7. But you're not going to win if you turn the ball over 6 times, especially when you're driving and you fumble. And so we had some opportunity to put points on the board. We didn't. We let it get away from us. We gave. They had a couple of big opportunities on turnovers. They had a pick that could just well have been a pick six. Kid ran it back to
right to the one.
Three.
Yeah.
And then the fumble that they picked up, scooped and scored. And then our luck, they managed to fumble it again. The guy behind him picked it up and continued to go. And so the wheels fell off the bus, and we ended up being a blowout. But I thought earlier on in the game we hung pretty tough with them. They're a good football team, Winslow.
Yeah. Speaking of blowouts, it's been an issue this week. Our colleague at the Portland Press Herald, Steve Craig, wrote a good story about how it seems to be more and more of them in high school football this year than in past years. I asked both of you guys, who are right there on the sidelines every week, are you feeling like games are more lopsided? I mean, maybe not in your league, BL, because it's been such a crazy competitive league, but for the most part, are there are a lot more haves than have-nots in high school football in Maine right now?
I don't think it's any different than any other year, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I think they tried with the crossover scheduling to maybe set it up so that, you know, the B-South team that's the one seed on paper, like a Falmouth or Marshwood or Kennebunk, would play a Meso or a Brunswick, who on paper was one of the top ones in our league. And I think, for the most part, that's worked out. But it's just a matter of there's going to be some teams that are down and hoping to change their fortunes in the coming year. So I'm not sure there's a perfect formula to get it where there's no blowouts. I think the 35-point spread and running time in the second half has really actually kind of helped that scenario for both teams. You know, when you're ahead in those scenarios, you don't really know how to handle it. When you're behind, you're like, okay, this is not, you know, this is not helping our self-esteem real much. So I think that's helped. You know, sometimes if you're getting blown out, it doesn't really feel so bad because the second half is over in 26 minutes. So I just don't know what else they can do beyond looking at it every year. Okay, this team should be good. Let's put them up a class or down, and that's just not going to happen. So it's just it's a byproduct. It's like that in every sport, right? Basketball games, there's blowouts, and maybe in football it's just more, more obvious because, physically the teams aren't matched up well, but I don't think there's anything you can do about it.
And it's tough if you have to fight the cycle of, you graduate some talent and you got some younger kids that you're trying to feel out and they haven't come along as much as you would have liked, or they get hurt, or they take up another sport, or, all these things happen. I mean, I can't help but think about Brunswick, having been on top for a few years, and now really, really struggling. And, we were there three years ago trying to gain a footing, and so I really have a little different perspective on being in Class SC playing competitively. I think that's the key word, being able to compete, because no one wants to go out and get, you know, 70 points hung on them. You know, Belfast this year has had to take it on the chin, and that's just not fun. You know, and so I haven't seen it be a major factor, but again, I'm not, you know, it is not like it was in Gardner a couple, 3 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to look at how many of those programs that are in that Belfast and Hamden position are teams that are just, the teams just aren't ready yet. You know, they have young players coming up, but they just need a few more years to grow into that, and which teams are just, this is as good as they can generate, and it's still just not good enough to be competitive, you know, a mark against the program.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of, it's much ado about nothing. There's blowouts in sports at every level, in every sport, whether, you know, high school football or basketball or ice hockey, baseball, it doesn't matter. It seems like maybe now some of the teams that are getting beat are squawking more about it. I don't know if it's because, you know, the teams that used to be hammers are now nails. I'm looking at, like, you know, Bangor's been taking it on the chin a little bit this year, Belfast. Mm. Some of these programs that historically have been strong are just, you know, not adjusting to being the team that's got to rebuild and regroup. And, you know, I also wonder if the way the game is played now has something to do with it. You know, when I was playing in high school, I graduated in 1990, we ran a wing tee that if we threw 15 times in a game, that was throwing a lot. Mm. Now you got teams like you guys at Coney and Skowhegan and, you know, schools that spread it out, and that gives a more wide open game with a chance to, you know, score into the 40s and 50s more. If we beat a team 28-7, that was a blowout.
Right.
You know, now that's
it
just
lengthens
a,
the game when you pass the ball.
Right.
More plays
right.
in a game.
You get more opportunity to run it up. I'm thinking, like, you know, Skowhegan Lawrence, I just saw them play 58-56 this week.
Yeah.
That wasn't a blowout, but
right.
you know, it was
points.
One of those, just, you know, scoring by the second.
Yeah, this is, most teams are, you know, over the course of a 30-year period are going to go through cycles. It's odd to see Bangor struggling because, I mean, when I was in high school, they were just trucking everybody, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and when I first started, we were on a 27-game losing streak when I started coaching. And, you know, and we in the interim, we won a state championship in there. And then, you know, it's just, you're going to have peaks and valleys, and it's tough to ride out the, you know, when you're in the valley and kind of trying to motivate your kids. But it's cyclical, and I think most, you know, programs, they, you know, rebuild at the youth level, and, you know, but that's hard to have that patience and wait 4 or 5 years for it to come to fruition. So I just think it's going to be, like you said, it happens at every sport at every level, and it's just it's impossible to get rid of.
Yeah, you can only do so much, and I think what they've done has helped, but I don't know what else you can do.
Yeah, and you wonder how much of it is that they just put in these fixes in the off season. The NPA did to kind of hopefully fix this blowout issue, if that's why everybody's talking about it.
It could be
we just made an effort to kind of clean this up, and now it's still there, versus if they just kind of kept the status quo from last year, if there would be much attention being brought to the amount of blowouts happening.
Something to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Drew, games this week, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the Oak Hill Lisbon game. I feel like I say Oak Hill every week, but they just—I mean—they play themselves back into the playoff mix with their, you know, big win against the Winthrop Monmouth, won by 2 points, big interception on the goal line, and so now they're in the eighth spot in Class D South, so they're just in. But Lisbon is coming, you know, 6-1, seeded third in Class D South, so that's going to be. I don't know if, again, it's heel points math. I don't know if losing that takes them out, or I know winning would do a bunch to their for their position. And they played these teams close. They gave Wells a tough game. Wells pulled away at the end, but it was tied at halftime, and so I don't know if they could beat Lisbon, but I don't expect us to be Lisbon's running away and burying them early. I think it's going to be a close game at least for the early going. What are you looking at from your end?
Oh, so many games. Well, in the Pine Tree Conference Class B, the Lawrence Messalonsky game has huge implications as to, you know, who's going to end up playing whom in the playoffs. Winner of that could be the first place team. In Class D South, Madison playing Spruce Mountain. Madison, new to the league, has a chance to wrap up the number two seed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that should be an interesting game. In Class D North, Winthrop playing a crossover game at Mount View. Mount View needs this game to make the playoffs. And then and a game I'm interested in Class C North is Winslow at MCI. MCI struggled a little bit early on in their new conference, and now they've got a couple wins under the belt in number three seed. And if they can, you know, play well against the Black Raiders or even beat them, they could, you know, earn a home game in the first round of their first playoffs at the higher division.
Always big games. It's like it's the last week of the season or something.
Yeah, it's almost like they matter.
hard to believe it's the last game of the season, but there
it,
we are.
It is. I mean, it seems like every game it's being played, it's, you know, in the mid-60s and sunny during the day.
Now it's dark at kickoff.
Yeah, absolutely. I say that now it's starting to get cold again, but
yeah.
Oh, well.
All right, well, that's it for us this week. Enjoy whatever games you can get out to. We'll see you next time on Gridiron Gurus when we talk high school playoffs.